I'm going to call to order a regular meeting for the Gilbert Beach City Council for Monday, May 16th, 2011. And would you all please stand and rise with us for a moment of silence for all of the brave men and women of the United States Air Army and other armed divisions that have sacrificed so much for our freedoms, and then remain standing as we do our flag salute this evening. Thank you. Tonight's flag salute, we usually have the youth come down and lead us in our pledge, and I think we've got two people tonight. So let's see. We've got, is it Deanna Martinez? She is 9 years old and a fourth grade student at Fairgrove Elementary School. She enjoys art, math, and it says multiplication and division, and cursive writing. She enjoys living on the Central Coast because she has lots of friends and friends, it is peaceful here, and she lives next to the beach. Deanna would like to graduate from college and become a doctor. Her interests are math and taking care of animals, and I believe she is accompanied by her teacher tonight, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. And then family. You have family here, too? And then Joshua. So Joshua Castillo, dad, and playing outdoor activities. And he is also accompanied this evening by his teacher and family. So, Deanna and Joshua, if you'd like to lead us in the pledge tonight, then we'd be honored.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you. So, both, why don't you come up here? We have something for you. So, this is for you. You certainly can. You want to hold that, and then Joshua, why don't you come here?
Actually, I think
she can go right over here. Why don't you come up here? Why don't you come here? We're gonna. You guys stay right here. Come here.
There you go.
There you go.
Oh, great.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow! Thank you very much.
You got Smiley. Thank you. Here you go. Here's some supplies. Thank you, and keep up the good work.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You want to shake everyone's hand?
You did a good job.
Thank you so much. That's fantastic. So, roll call.
Here.
Councilmember Molnar?
Here.
Councilmember Peterson?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Nichols?
Here.
And Mayor Schultz?
Here. Thank you, Donna. City Attorney, can you cover our closed session announcements?
Certainly. Honorable Mayor, Council members, members of the public, on May 2nd, after meeting in closed session on one item, which was conference with labor negotiations for General Employees Service Employees International Union Local 620, Council returned to open session, and there were no reportable actions taken.
Very good. Thank you, City Attorney. And at this point, the Council will review the order of the agenda as presented by the staff and make any changes to that agenda. So do any members of the Council want to change any items on the regular agenda?
Mr. Mayor, our Public Works Employee of the Year, John Barkley, will accept the proclamation.
Oh, very good. So let me read this, and then, John, you can come up and join us. So this is a proclamation of the City Council of the City of Grover Beach declaring May 15th through the 21st, 2011, National Public Works Week. And it reads, whereas public works services provided in our community are an integral part of our citizens' everyday lives, and whereas the support and understanding of informed citizenry is vital to the efficient operation of public works systems and programs such as water, sewer, streets, public buildings, and solid waste collection, And whereas the health, safety, and comfort of this community greatly depends on these facilities and services, and whereas the quality and effectiveness of these facilities as well as their planning, design, and construction is vitally dependent upon the efforts and skill of public works officials, and whereas the efficiency of the qualified and dedicated personnel who staff public works departments is materially influenced by the people's attitude and understanding of the importance of the work they perform, and whereas in 1962, President John F. Kennedy designated the first National Public Works Week to pay tribute to our public works employees for their substantial contributions to our national health and welfare. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Grover Beach City Council does hereby proclaim the week of May 15th through the 21st, 2011 as National Public Works Week. So, John, if you'll come forward.
Wanted to thank you, and been here 24 years. It's been very enjoyable. Got a great bunch of people to work with, and thank you.
Great, thank you, John.
Thank you.
And you tell the guys that they're doing a great job, and we appreciate everything they do. Perfect. Okay, let's move on to our presentations this evening. This is item number 2, and this is a Parks, Recreation, and Beautification Commission quarterly report. So, Mr. Lee.
Good evening, Jeff Lee, I'm the chair now of the Parks, Rec, and Beautification Committee. I'm going to give you the quarterly reports from October through December of 2010, and then the first quarter report for 2011. So I guess we can make this a double quarterly report or a biannual report. So double outfits. moving on to November, commission, in an effort to raise awareness and learn more about local agencies, their goals and objectives, we started to have presentations provided to the commission with a brief overview at our monthly meetings. In November, a presentation was given by the Grover Beach Chamber of Commerce chairman, Michael Boyer, regarding the chamber's tasks for recently. The commission also hosted a joint commission meeting with the planning commission to review the bicycle master plan document for final recommendations to the city council. Additionally, a property at 612 La Selva was approved for a beautification award, and the owner at that location recently took advantage of the city's cash for grass program, which we are still highly recommending. Moving on to December, the city had an annual holiday parade and Santa's workshop, along with the tree lighting events were held, and they were very successful. Again, expenditures were kept low, and revenues did exceed the expenses for that event. Unfortunately, due to budget constraints, the Holiday of Lights decorating contest was not held. However, at the commission's meeting, we did strategize how to make plans for having that event and other events that aren't able to be held for budgetary reasons, trying to figure out how to bring some of those back in the future. Additionally, recruitment flyers were prepared and given to the Five Cities Newcomers Club, and they're presented at their monthly luncheon with the intent of increasing and recruiting volunteers for the city. So, moving into the first quarter of 2011, at our January meeting, we had a presentation by the Exploration Station representatives, Deborah Love, the executive director, and Tasha Punches, the program coordinator. Additionally, the Cal Poly men's baseball team provided their annual free sports clinic to boys and girls at Eckbaum Field. Moving into February, we had a beautification award presented to the owners of 1042 Margarita Avenue. Additionally, myself and coordinator Nora O'Donnell attended the commissioner's workshop hosted by the San Luis Obispo County Administrators Parks and Recreation Association, also known as SLO CAPRA, up at Hearst Castle. Then moving into March, the city held their annual volunteer recognition night, and a number of people came out and joined us at Trueville Center, and we saluted the community's outstanding volunteers, and Mayor Scholes assisted with all of those presentations. The annual elections were held to elect a new chair and a vice chair, and by short straw vote, I became the chair. Just kidding. And Dee Santos was elected to the vice chair. Representative, even in these times, people are coming out to their mothers are coming out to dance with their sons, which is a wonderful thing. So this past weekend, we had a monster skateboarding contest, which was very well attended, and some good skating was held by all. Upcoming, the Spring Garden Tour and Plant Exchange happens on June 5th. So it's a Sunday from 1 to 3, and that's also the kickoff date for our Summer Sizzlin' Concert Series and Farmer's Market. So I'm here to answer any of the questions, or I'll go sit back down.
Excellent report. Let me see if there's any questions. Any questions for Mr. Lee? No? No. I guess you get to go sit down.
Perfect. Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you, Jeff. Thanks for the great work you're doing. Okay, let's move into public communications this evening. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total or any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this council. But please bear in mind that the council cannot take action on any items brought up during public communications. And while I reference the time limit, I will use my discretion to grant you additional time if I feel it's needed. Also, I want to make sure that you hold your comments to any items that are not on the agenda, because when we get to any item that's on the agenda, I will give you adequate time at that moment to speak and address the council. So is there anyone that would like to address the council during public communication this evening? Please come forward and state your name and city of residence for the record. I'll let you introduce yourself.
Great. Hello. I am Morgan Marshall. I'm the program manager with the San Luis Obispo Regional Rideshare. And I wanted to come here and personally thank you for your support of Bike Month and declaring May Bike Month in the city of Grover Beach. Also, I want to thank you, Mayor Scholes, for your support in taking the Executive Challenge, which is happening this Wednesday, where we're all leaders throughout the county are pledging their support of active transportation and sustainable communities and riding their bikes once throughout May. It's been a great month so far. We have about 40 free events happening all throughout the month of May, and all of these events are planned by volunteers that Rideshare supports, volunteers all throughout the county and all throughout the community. In fact, just a few weekends ago, we were in Arroyo Grande where a local volunteer planned Bike Fest and got Fat Tire to come down here and sponsor it and donate an original Fat Tire cruiser, which we actually gave away to someone who came to the event, and about 200 people attended. And it was.
My name is Brad Snook. I'm the volunteer coordinator for our county's chapter of the Surf Rider Foundation. For the last 3 months, Surf Rider has been asking for an investigation of management at our wastewater treatment plant in Oceano. Surf Rider Foundation is a nonprofit environmental organization dedicated to the protection and enjoyment of the world's oceans, waves, and beaches for all people through conservation, activism, research, and education. Jeff and I have been functioning, Jeff is our chair, as activists for these last few months, asking for the investigation regarding a notice of violation that came out from the State Water Board and regarding the chief plant operator. The outcome of the investigation showed that the chief plant operator didn't update the operations manual for over 10 years, and also had a statement on the work order not to do sampling during some cleaning processes. The water board came in and said that was an automatic violation because the plant is supposed to meet permit standards 24 hours a day. So, in effect, for years, the plant was violating water board standards. Last week, the state issued another notice of violation regarding the massive spill in Oceano in mid-December, where depending on which estimate you see, it could have been up to 3 million gallons of sewage spilled. The water board said that the plant was down for about 12 hours, and the plant discharges between 2 and 3 million gallons of treated sewage on a normal day. So for 12 hours, that's half of that was not treated during that day. And we had advisories and postings go up for the following days around that storm event at all the beaches in the area. So this is a message from the notice required that South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District to submit not only a technical report outlining the cause of the spill and the district's response, but to the NOV, and then they would discuss it in their council meeting. I would suggest that this council do the same, make two agenda items. Also, I'd like to make one other request very quickly.
Can you wrap up in 30
seconds? Yes.
Mr. Snick.
I was at a Pismo Beach water quality meeting. They're doing a quarterly kind of public meeting, sit down with the public works person. And we were talking about water quality issues, and we asked Pismo Beach to send a letter to the county asking for more frequent water measurements and testing. Right now, they only test once a week unless there's a violation of the standards. Then they test the next day, and they keep going until it's clean. We'd like that to be at least two times a week, and since they already have these processes in place, it could be very cost-effective, and also as we go into summer, it could be very valuable. So it would be great if we could have a letter from the council or from the mayor to the county. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Snow. Is there anyone else that would like to address the council to a public
Mayor, may I make a comment?
Why don't you hold that?
Reference to his statement.
Why don't you hold it, and I'll close. When I close to the public, I'll come back and allow you to make a comment, so we'll get through this, okay?
Honorable Mayor, Council, good to see you again tonight. Jeff Pynack from Oceano and Chair, Surf Rider County. It's unfortunate that this spill happened in December, and it's just a fact. I want to echo the thanks, of course, to the Public Works employees because National Public Works Week, we all rely on Public Works workers, and I'm sure Public Works workers are so valuable to the community and valuable to our city and our cities in this sewer district. However, the best Public Works employees in the world can't help outdated infrastructure. It's no secret that in America, infrastructure that was created during the 40s, 50s, and 60s, I'm sure you've seen the articles in the paper and on the internet that everything's starting to, quotes, fall apart. Well, being that our sewage plant that hands of the public anymore, it's the job of the public and the cities and the municipalities to do something about that. If we don't really know what's going on down there, and of course, I suggest that the sand district down there and our sewage plant is somewhat of a black hole. Pardon the analogy to some black hole, but of course, it's just difficult down there to get any kind of information out. Also, sewage treatment is not a very exciting subject. It's not something that many of us like to even think about, let alone ask questions about. The greatest harm is done to our ocean communities, meaning the ecology of this whole area here. The solution to pollution being dilution, which was the motto of the 40s, 50s, and 60s, continues to be there. And, of course, Surfrider hopes that at some point in time we can integrate both our freshwater needs with our sewage treatment plants and plans so that we can take this resource that we are currently wasting, this 5 million gallons a day with the combination of all five of the cities. This 5 million gallons a day currently is wasted. It's fresh water. We waste it. And it just disappears. We need to bank it. We need to stop that outfall. If we stop the outfall, and move the water inland, we can use it to basically replenish our aquifers. Thanks for the time tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Pontiac. Is there anyone else that would like to address the council during public communication? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to close public communications and bring it back to the council. Mayor Pro Tem.
Yeah, Mr. Snook, I believe, made mention of the fact that the plant has been operating for at least the last 10 years with this error going on, this violation going on. I would like the public to know, as we were told by Mr. Wallace at the last meeting, that this plant operates under the control of the state, and in the last 25 years, it has had one violation, and that was a result of the storm in December, which most of the
communication. And so at this point, we're going to move on to the next item. I know that we've had discussion on this. We had Mr. Wallace come here. The district meets regularly, and so we will definitely have a conversation, and we'll go and attend that. So I don't want this to be a debate here tonight.
Will we be able to discuss this during council communication?
If there is an action that you would like to do, whether it is a request to put this on a future agenda, that would be the appropriate time. We will discuss and deliberate it as a council.
Thank you.
Okay. Since it is not an item on this agenda, we cannot take any action. I said that earlier. So we're going to move on, and we're going to go into our public hearings this evening. This is item number 3. This is the 2011 weed abatement protest hearing. Fire Chief Hewitt. Ricky Heath, Battalion Chief Heath. Yeah. Nice to see you.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor and Council. Ricky Heath, Battalion Chief, Five Cities Fire Authority. I'm here this evening to talk to you about the 2011 weed abatement program. Excuse me. As per state government code, the City Council Resolution Number 11-29, on April 19th, a notice to abate fire hazards postcards were mailed out to all Grover Beach property owners from the Five Cities Fire Authority. May 1st, a citywide inspection of lots and properties in violation of weed abatement standards were completed. May 6th, a public hearing notice was published in the Tribune regarding weed abatement protest hearings scheduled for this evening. Attached to council will find a complete list of 57 lots that were noted in violation. Beginning Tuesday, May 17th, property owners will have 30 days to comply with the Grover Beach weed abatement standards. The deadline for compliance will be June 15th. On June 16th, the vegetation management officers will reinspect the lots and note or update the list, the violation list, if necessary. During the period of June 18th through the 25th, the weed abatement contractors.
Thank you for that report. And let's see if there's any questions. Any question of Battalion Chief Heath? Councilmember Bright.
Thank you. I'm wondering, once the notice of violation is received and that violation has been abated, does the property owner have to do anything else?
That's whenever the abatement managers, officers, will go out and re-inspect the lots.
So they're just going to automatically go and re-inspect.
Right.
So once they've cleared their lot of weeds, they don't have to come here or anything. It'll just be
exactly
taken care of.
The abatement managers will go out, reinspect, and update the list of violations. So if somebody cleared their lots and they were on that list, they would be removed from that list.
I see. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you.
Okay. There are no other questions. Thank you, Battalion Chief.
Okay. Thank you. Have a good evening.
Absolutely. So this is, in fact, a public hearing, so I'm going to open this up to the public. Is there any member of the community that would like to address this item before the council tonight? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to close it and bring it back to the council. You guys want to have some discussion or some prepared to make a motion on this item?
I'll move for staff's recommendation.
I'll second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? None. So motion carries. No abstentions. Let's move on to item number four. This is adoption of the 2010 California Fire Code and amending fireworks regulations. Mr. Buckingham, are you giving the staff report?
Yes, I am. Good evening, Mayor, members of the council. Now, the state mandates that every 3 years the fire codes are updated for all cities throughout the state of California. On January 1st of this year, the 2010 California Fire Code went into effect. The city codifies the California Fire Code by amending our city municipal code, and we adopt it by reference. The state does allow cities to make amendments to the fire code if local conditions warrant changes. In our case, the city is proposing two local amendments. The First Amendment adds a requirement that driveways over 40 feet in length be designated as fire lanes. This is consistent with our current fire code and has been for many years. It just simply allows driveways greater than 40 feet to be signed as fire access, fire lanes, and allows us to tow vehicles if they're blocking edge, eliminating the city's current use of a multiplier or weighted average. So currently, all residential projects are required to install fire sprinklers based on the proposed area, how many square feet, and the type of addition, whether it's living area, garage, patio, so forth. And if that weighted square footage calculation is 40% or greater, then that triggers the requirement for fire sprinklers to be installed throughout the house. In the case of commercial, industrial, multifamily residential buildings, same type of weighted ratio, but it's only 25% of the total area that triggers the upgrade to fire sprinklers. So two primary reasons for the requested change by the fire authority. First is the current calculation takes into consideration design features such as front porches, open covered areas, things like that, which are left to interpretation in calculating that exact area. The proposed change of a simple 50% of existing square footage would be more straightforward and easily applied to all types of development. As a result, it's anticipated and hoped that the proposed new calculation method would have a greater ease of use by the public and contractors, developers, and so forth. The second goal or reason for the proposed change is really just to create a consistent regulation among the five city fire authority three jurisdictions. So, and again, there is some thought that with local developers and contractors who are doing business in this area that the ease of having consistent regulations will be beneficial to them as well. So the commercial, industrial, and multifamily residential projects proposed additions going from 25 to 50%, that would benefit all of those types of additions. They simply would have the threshold will be higher, and they would not have to install the fire sprinklers for smaller additions. For single-family residential projects, raising the threshold from the existing 40% to the 50% would be beneficial in the vast majority of instances. The only scenario that we could see that it could be more onerous is if a property owner is building an attached garage, because right now that has a lower weighted average. Now it would be 1-to-1. So in summary, that's the only scenario that we could find that, again, could be more onerous to a homeowner. So in addition to the local, or the, I should say the fire code amendments, the fire authority believes that the community safety would be enhanced by limiting that discharge period to those few days around the 4th of July celebration. So again, the goal of the proposed changes of the fireworks regulations is to create consistent regulations among the five cities fire authority, three jurisdictions. And it would also, again, provide the public with a uniform set of rules, so wherever you're discharging, you'd be hopefully falling under the same rules and regulations. So in conclusion, staff's recommending the council amend the municipal code to adopt the 2010 fire code and make these two amendments to our fireworks sales and discharge periods. So that concludes staff's report, and I've got a lot of members of the Five Cities Fire Authority here to answer questions as well.
That was pretty evident when you look out in the audience. Nice thorough report. Thank you. Any questions of staff? Okay, let me start way to my left. I'm Councilmember Monar.
Okay. With the switch in the fire code, you were talking about going from... my question is, when you go to 50%, are you including patios in this?
No, actually. So right now, you'd actually be counting a wood deck patio. That calculation would be eliminated from this simplified 50%.
Okay.
So again, that could be construed as a benefit as well.
Okay, that's good. The only other thought I have about the fireworks, I know a lot of people buy them to use on the New Year's Eve, which I think is a really good time to do it. That's what I do. So I think that I think New Year's Eve should be included in that. But I am very much in agreement with the rest, considering I have a stand that goes across from my office, and they were selling till midnight every night, and that's pretty annoying. So,
okay. And I'll let the Five Cities Fire Authority address the issue of discharge at the appropriate time.
Thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Peterson.
I have one other question. I know, for instance, we've got neighboring cities that allow no fireworks. Pismo doesn't. And I've observed that the beach on the 4th of July is a bit like Mad Max, the movie. So am I to assume that, and you take your life in your hands, am I to assume that this fireworks ban doesn't apply to the beach? These laws, they don't apply to the beach?
I believe that's accurate, but I will defer to the fire authority on that.
Okay, thank you.
To be shot anywhere. And if it goes up in the air and explodes, it's illegal.
I guess we just don't have the manpower to enforce.
That's correct. Several of the communities utilize these as fundraising events. It's very difficult to deny people the opportunity to. This is some one time that they raise money for their organizations throughout the year. And so 4th of July is very hazardous, significant to us, and there's a lot of illegal use of fireworks that go on in all the communities, but particularly the beach.
And for Councilmember Molnar, what happens on New Year's Eve?
According to this,
we all get arrested.
Don't want her getting in trouble.
That would become an enforcement issue as well.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, we have some more discussion. So he's just answering questions right now. But I do want to get some clarification, Chief, so don't sit down.
Okay.
So you were saying all fireworks on the beach, or are we drawing a distinction between safe and sane and those that are illegal?
All fireworks are not allowed on the beach.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So let me see if there's any questions to my right. Mayor Pro Tem.
Yeah, I have one question. Does this now bring all five cities in line having the same regulations with reference to fireworks?
At this point, if the council were to adopt the language proposed, it would bring Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach into consistency. Oceano has not acted yet. So, again, the fire authority's goal is to have all three of the cities or jurisdictions have the same regulations. Until Oceano does that, there is no guarantee.
What about Pismo Beach?
They are, not served by the Five Cities Fire Authority, as you know, but they're also, they do not allow fireworks, is my understanding.
Okay, but
at all.
It brings our ordinance in line with theirs.
With Arroyo Grande.
What about Pismo? Or have you not looked at that?
On the fireworks issue?
Yes.
Yeah, they do not allow the discharge of fireworks or sale.
Okay. So,
we would not be consistent with Pismo Beach.
Okay.
Unless you build a pier. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Don't go with that. Councilmember Bright.
I just basically all of my questions have been answered. I'm anxious to hear about the New Year's Eve part, though. We enjoy that myself. But regarding the 40-foot length.
We got that. And then I had the same question about New Year's Eve, believe it or not. So I think that's something we are going to want to discuss. So, if there is some discretion here, we need to have that discussion. But let me get back to the fire code and the discussion about sprinklers. I think you know, and I'm sure the chief and I have discussed this, when the council came up and approved the elaborate formula what was happening previously was people who were adding a small room onto a small home was then being triggered to do a ton of frontage improvements, even undergrounding utility lines. And so I just want to be assured that the recommended way of doing the calculation, which I agree, it probably would be ease and consistent regulation, and a consistent regulation, that we do not fall into an unintended consequence of penalizing folks who we want to be improving these small homes. So is that your understanding?
Again, because for the vast majority of cases, and especially the industrial, commercial, multifamily, this is, I'll say, a benefit in the sense that it doesn't trigger the requirement. So for people looking to expand, it's going to reduce the cost if they don't have to install fire sprinklers. So again, we see that from an economic development standpoint, if you want to say it, it does alleviate the trigger of or the installation of fire sprinklers. Now, this does not change, and we do use a multiplier effect for street improvements, as you know, as well. So no change to that. We just have to do a good job of conveying to the public that this is the new standard for fire sprinklers.
Okay, then maybe you can come back and tell us if it's worth taking a look at that calculation as well, because obviously we're complicating this further, mm-hmm. having two different formulas for one for fire and one for other improvements. Okay, so then I just want you also to clarify, if someone owns an 800 square foot home with no enclosed parking, if they were to add a two-car garage of 440 square feet, under what's proposed, they would in effect have to then sprinkler the home when they were adding a two-car garage to an existing residence. Is that correct?
Correct. That would be an example of where this is more onerous than the existing code.
Okay, so then what is the remedy for someone in that situation?
Thought about that with the garage. Are you talking about attached garages then? Or detached?
Attached. What we see, especially on corner lots in this scenario, is someone is able to build a detached garage. As long as it's 10 feet or greater from the existing structure, those would not be required to be fire sprinklered at all. So. Okay.
But this would trigger them having to put sprinklers inside their whole house? In the garage?
Only if it's an attached garage.
Only if it's an attached garage. And I'm just holding that out as an example. I don't know if that necessarily would become commonplace. I just wanted to make sure that we all understood that potential implication. Right. But I don't know if there's many instances where that scenario would come into play.
You know, the most common scenario we see in the city is houses with one-car garages that are doing upgrades that need to trigger the second car. That's more common than houses that have no garage, but those certainly do exist out there.
Okay. So I just wanted people to understand if that is a situation that might apply to you, there is a remedy, a potential remedy. Okay. Since we are done asking all of our questions, this is a public hearing item. Is there any member of the public that would like to address the council on this item?
Hi, I'm Linda McClure. I'm also the Grover Beach Chamber of Commerce Chair. I've been asked to address this particular issue of sale. I understand that you need to stop it at a certain time, and I think that that's a great idea. However, please keep in mind when you're making this decision, this is a huge amount of money, especially on the 4th of July. When people are going home, they're leaving, they're buying those fireworks from us, and it's going to really affect the chamber if this is put into effect. I know it's annoying. They're selling until midnight and stuff. Usually we get something on Grand Avenue, and there's not a lot of residential properties around us. However, we would even if, you know, there was residential and stuff. I, for one, buy those fireworks not only on that day or the day before, but I also buy it when it's after hours. I give it to family members for the 4th of July, for New Year's Eve, and for next year. And you can get a little bit of a discount at that point in time. So it helps the chamber. We get rid of what's there. We don't have to send it back. and it does a lot for the community for us to be able to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. Is there anyone else? Please, either one, come forward, state your name and city of residence for the record.
Honorable Mayor and Council, my name is Peggy Huberry, and I'm representing the Five Cities Girls Softball, who again has been lucky enough to get a fireworks booth in your city for the last 3 years. And those hours, I also worked at a booth in Arroyo Grande last year, and those hours, the last 2 days mainly, the third and the fourth until midnight, are crucial. I mean, they're. If we took away, because Arroyo Grande also does not start the same day we do here, you know, in Grover. They start later, and I would rather give up those first 2 days than to give up the late on the third and the fourth for, you know, that is our biggest fundraiser of the year, and that allows us to give scholarships to kids, girls who can't afford to play, and the uniforms and everything. So it is, I would also, like Linda was saying, ask that you really consider that when you're making your decision on the time frame.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Judy Tennant Schwarm, and I am just simply a resident. And I know we're really having economic hard times, and I would like to hear if the implementing of the new restrictions would be more costly.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone else? Okay, seeing no one else coming forward, I'm going to close this to the public, bring it back to the council. So, Chief Hubert, I think Ms. Huberry brought up the question of the time that is being proposed to limit from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Can you give us a comparison of what is the time, the day and time that's in Arroyo Grande, because if we're talking about coming into to being consistent, is this consistent with their hours of operation?
Mayor, I'd first like to clarify, if I could, that the ordinance that was adopted in Arroyo Grande was to meet Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach's time frame of leaving the sale of.
Okay.
Could I ask a question?
Sure.
I understand the consistency argument. I'm wondering, have there been problems associated with a late opening? Is there a reason, law enforcement or fire issues, that we shouldn't let them be open later?
We've had no issues as a result of the later sales. We developed a matrix for the three agencies and tried to look across the board to apply some consistency. I hadn't had any conversation with law enforcement, said, is there more law enforcement issues if have a time frame? And I hadn't received any complaints to the fire authority last year concerning time frames of sale after, you know, later hours. And if I could, while I'm still at the podium on this issue, is ask the young lady if she meant restrictions as a fireworks issue or the fire sprinkler issue. Ma'am?
Either or both.
Okay. So, the enforcement issue for all the agencies concerning fireworks, there's nothing that will be more costly to the agencies, because we do the same things. There's a pre-fireworks meeting for each of the folks that have the permits with a fireworks vendor and the fire department, and then we go out and we inspect the booths, and we go out and you know, if we have any issues, we give them time to before they start the sale, and then we monitor that, and then we at the very end we end up going out and make sure that they're breaking down and they're doing what they say they're doing. So we do that every year for the 4th of July. So there is no more cost associated with any change in these restrictions.
I have a,
okay.
Excuse
Hold
me.
Hold on. Okay. What do you?
Can
you
I have, ask?
You
a
have a question?
Yes, please.
Okay, Councilmember Monar.
Okay, the permits have already been given out for the different vendors already. No?
Well, it depends on the jurisdiction. We've already started the process in Rio Grande. I don't believe Grover Beach has as of yet. And Oceana, I believe, is just starting the process.
Because this leads into another thought. Are they, I know last year, as I said, there was one allowed on Trouville by the corner of 13th at the market there, and that is on the edge of an R3, and they were there till midnight at night.
What's awkward about this item? We've got some fire code amendments that you're asking us to consider and to adopt. And then we're talking about fireworks and trying to come up with consistent regulations in the three jurisdictions. And I have one ordinance. Is that correct?
These should be separated.
That's where I'm going.
Okay.
And so I wanted to ask the city attorney, because we're getting a lot of discussion over fireworks and not a lot of discussion on the actual code itself. So I want to be able to maybe separate the two and take action separately. So, city attorney.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council members. I think that it is within your discretion to simply at this point in time delete or remove from consideration all the sections that are dealing with the fireworks sale and move forward with the adoption of the ordinance dealing with the fire code adoption by itself. And basically we would bring back for second reading only those portions that you would move forward today. However, you were to start making changes to both, then we would renotice and bring all of it back in two separate formats. As a point of clarification, Mayor, since I do have the microphone, currently the fire sprinkler ordinance does not have a hardship exception. It's a public safety issue, and I don't believe that there is a provision for somebody not doing that based on financial hardship.
Thank you for that.
Unlike the undergrounding of utilities and the other ones that we have.
Okay. Good information to have. Okay. So we could separate and do this in two ordinances, or we could move forward as presented with some amendments, correct?
Well, you could go ahead, and if you want to move the fire code adoption item forward.
Best go forward. So let's discuss just the fire code amendments that's suggested here tonight. Certainly the issue of not having an exception provision in the code, does everyone think we need to have something like that, or is everyone satisfied with the code amendments as presented this evening?
I think we ought to separate them.
I agree.
Okay.
Yes.
We have consensus on that? Yes, we have.
Would you like me to make a motion?
I don't think I'm ready. I need some discussion, I think.
Okay.
If you're talking about making a motion to adopt one of these two things.
We're going to try and separate this out. And so
if we're making a motion to separate them, I'm good with that.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Well, I think we have a consensus to do that, City Attorney.
Thank you. If that is the direction that the council wishes to proceed, I would simply recommend that you delete all of those portions of the ordinance that's before you that deals with Chapter 12 amendments and move forward with scheduling, finishing the public hearing, which needs to be continued, and then scheduling the second reading of only those portions that deal with the adoption of the fire code. We could then bring back to you, after that you could deliberate the other issues and instruct staff accordingly, and we could come back with an amendments to Chapter 12 based upon those discussions. And you would simply reconsider the firework part, potentially at the next meeting or whenever we can bring that back to you. It
so
would have to be re-noticed.
So we would have to
basically you would conduct a first reading of Chapter 12.
I got you.
Once more.
Okay. Are there any Chief? Time limits, or is there any timelines that we need to be cognizant of?
I don't believe so. You could operate under the previous ordinance as to how you conduct fireworks in the community, the sale and discharge.
Okay.
Or request for an exemption or whatever we want to call it. Because I do believe that will create a greater hardship on some folks. Other than that, I'm fine with the changes that they want to go forward with.
Okay.
So that's just regarding that. I have other topics to discuss regarding the fireworks.
Fireworks. Yes. Anyone else have any discussion under the code amendments?
I agreed with the hardship. There should be something in there.
Okay. So I think we've got some consensus on that.
Consensus, but it's not legally there can't be.
There can't be.
Is that true? Legally?
City Attorney.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council Members. The areas dealing with public safety create a very difficult situation for this type of consideration. A scenario of, let's say, a waiver based upon a financial hardship. 3 months later, the house catches on fire and there's a fatality in that house, and somebody comes to the conclusion that sprinklers would have prevented that fatality from occurring. The city's liability and exposure would be tremendous under those circumstances. So issues dealing with public safety are generally not weighed against how much money it would cost to achieve the best possible solution.
Okay. So I'm not sure if we're talking about trying to give an exemption from state law or the code, but staff is coming to us asking us to amend a formula that this council adopted, and I think that's problematic if we're creating something that is going to now create a hardship and people have no relief. And I understand the whole issue of public safety and whatnot. So are we doing this just for the ease of calculation or convenience?
Again, certainly this creates a higher threshold for the majority of expansions, whether that be industrial, commercial, or multifamily, and a lot of single-family homes. But we have highlighted there is this one instance, one particular circumstance where if you want to add just a garage, you, again, people that...
No.
Staff?
I'll defer to the fire authority on that.
If the garage is attached, we have a high probability that the garages are firing garages. We just had one, as you're probably aware of, a few months ago here in town. And that's so it doesn't make any sense to only sprinkler part of the structure. So if it's attached or within 10 feet, then we're asking that both, you know, structures be fire sprinklered, because fire can transmit from one being so close to one structure to another. I don't believe it's in the staff report, but in the new code, the 2010 code, all new single-family residential structures are sprinklered.
Yeah.
We can't get in this. So what we're looking at here is just the remodel aspects of expansions of structures, and we collectively, I have my fire prevention committee here. We put our heads together to come up with a scenario that would be more onerous than the current 40%. And that's really all we could come up with is a attached garage scenario. So it's we're not really doing this to because it's trying to simplify and standardize across the board. We just think that it makes it, the current formula is confusing to try to apply. And I think that the reason that it was originally council adopted that is because it was standardized with the other applications of development. Mm-hmm. And so this seems to be pretty consistent across the county that 50% of an increase in or alteration of any structure triggers the sprinkler condition. So we feel that in some applications it's more development friendly, and in those that it gets us to the point where if the building is going to be utilized under a more hazardous condition or greatly expanded, that it gets the fire sprinkler requirement that it should.
Okay. Great. Thank you, Chief. Mm-hmm.
To limit the sale time. I mean, at this point in time, whoops, it hasn't been a problem in our city, although I guess in isolated incidents it has been, but there are noise ordinances that they must abide by. So I really would not be in favor of just so we can be the same as the Rio Grande from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. I don't see a reason for that. If we had a lot of complaints or it was labor intensive for our police force or fire department, whoever's going to enforce this, then I would think there's a reason. But I don't see that as a compelling reason to change the time when they can sell their fireworks.
Okay.
That's mine.
And any thoughts on New Year's Eve?
Oh, of course, New Year's Eve.
Mayor Pro Tem, you have anything?
My only comment with reference to the comment of wanting to be consistent, we have consolidated the fire service into the Five Cities Fire Authority. I think it's important that we have consistency in the regulations, which the fire department is going to be called upon to enforce. And if it's their desire to have this consistent throughout the three communities that they serve, then I think we should go along with that. I don't think it's a big hardship on anybody if they can't buy fireworks between 9 p.m. at night and midnight. I don't see that as a big problem. I would like to see the consistency of it. That's why we put this Five Cities Fire Authority together, and I think we need to continue to work hard to make it work, and this is one of the items that will help make it move a lot smoother.
Okay.
I've got comments.
And Councilmember Peterson.
I think that this is a really bad time. I think any time is a bad time to do anything that creates hardship for charitable organizations. And we're already doing some takeaways possibly later in the meeting with, or maybe we aren't. We'll have to see. But at any rate, I really don't want to see us create hardship for our charitable organizations and the people they're serving, our community. And this is maybe the one time of the year where we have an active nightlife. So we've been trying to get an active nightlife down at the beach. So the last thing I want to do is...
Councilmember Warner.
Well, I agree with actually all of this for the different organizations that make money. I mean, I come from Los Angeles, and it was such a thrill to be able to buy fireworks and to see the different groups make some money, because it is hard to bring money in these days. So my only concern is any stands that are really close to residential. Over there on Trouville and 13th, the first property over is considered CN. The next one over are all R3. Mm-hmm. And that's what the problem is. So if you just keep them over all on Grand, they can be open till midnight. That's fine. And of course, New Year's Eve.
Yeah, okay. I support New Year's Eve, too.
All right.
I've got a party sometime.
Okay, so let me just say this, and then we'll see if we can get a motion. And my inclination was to separate them, but I want to see if we could just come to some conclusion tonight. I'm okay with the fire code amendments and with the understanding that has been given by the chief and understanding fires start in garages and knowing that we probably will have very few homes that are that small that would more or less trigger that requirement. So moving forward with what's proposed, I'm okay with. With respect to the fireworks, I think we try to set the trend ourselves. And so I understand the issue of standardizing, but if we really don't have any reports that going later is problematic, then maybe we strike a compromise and say 9 a.m. to 11 p.m., and you do that on July 3rd. Or, you know, because I think we do need to have some standardization, and maybe then they can go back to Royal Grand and ask them to raise the limit to 11 p.m., and I think that kind of resolves that issue if we want to be consistent across the board, because I do think we not 9 p.m., especially if we're only talking about a limited amount of time in the year, if we're talking 2 days out of 365 days. I think the other thing is I didn't hear any compelling argument not to allow Safe and Sane on New Year's Eve. So if we could allow that, that's one other day during the year, and I understand there's a cost for enforcement, but the fact is, if we're saying you can only do fireworks 6 days out of 365, we can't control social behavior. So there will be bad actors out there the other 355 or days apart.
In section 17, the change would read, sales during this period of time shall be limited from 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. each day. Everything would remain the same. So we're changing the 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. based
That's
on
correct.
The discussion.
Okay. Okay.
And then in section 3996, which is the public discharge period, I would recommend, based on what discussion I've heard, that the section will be amended to read, discharge of safe and sane fireworks shall occur only from noon on the 3rd of July through midnight on the 5th of July and from noon on December 30th.
31st.
Well, that is up to the council.
The day before.
Go ahead.
31st, okay, December 31st. I'm basically, you have a two-day window on the 4th of July. I'm mimicking that with regard to the New Year's Eve. But if it could be from the noon on December 31st until midnight of January 1st.
Okay,
oh, you said the 30th?
Well, let's discuss that. He's just throwing out some language. So, does someone want to try and form a motion? There's been some suggested language. And so basically,
can I have a little more discussion?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So we then say we're going to limit the sale from 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. and ask then go back to Arroyo Grande and see if they want to agree to that. If they don't, then we're still not consistent. So why are we changing? Why not midnight?
Well, I think we have no limits on the books right now, is from what I understand. So someone could start selling at 5 a.m. and go until
2 a.m. Yeah.
2 a.m. So really, we're
but
trying
does
to.
Does anyone ever do that?
Well, and who cares if they do? It's not causing any problems.
On Trueville, it did.
If
the sale mm-hmm. of them, so. Okay, thank you.
Hey, I'm just one vote, so we've been at this for a while, so I'm just trying to see if someone would like to try and craft a motion on this item.
Okay, then I'm going to give it a go.
Okay.
Unless you wanted to.
Well, actually, I was thinking we should maybe for New Year's do it the 30th as was first suggested.
Okay, let's see what the motion. One of you try and make a formal motion.
You go.
Oh, no, I haven't done one yet.
Okay.
Doesn't mean I'm any good at it. Okay, then I'm going to make a motion that. Find where I am first. Okay, that we amend. Oh, boy. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this.
Okay, I'll do it.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay.
So let's go to page 3.
Let's all turn to page
3. So let's go to page 3. And then just...
Okay.
So if I were to form a motion, I would basically move staff's recommendation with the following amendments. Yeah. And then whatever your amendments are.
Okay, so we're accepting number 1 here.
Move for staff's regulation.
Okay. Okay. So how do you start it?
So you move to adopt staff.
I move that we adopt the staff's recommendation with the following amendments.
Perfect. Mm-hmm.
No changes to the fire code concerning the sprinklers. But as per the fireworks, that we allow the sale of the fireworks being from noon. Oh, no, that's the, yeah.
Noon on the 30th.
Noon, what's that? Go ahead.
You're fine. You're
noon
fine.
On June 28th through noon on July 5th, with the time frame being from 9 a.m. to 11 p.m.
Okay.
And also that we allow fireworks to be discharged on December 30th from... What was that, noon?
Mm-hmm.
Until January 1st at midnight.
I second that.
Okay.
Is that correct?
I think, is everyone clear on that? So bottom line is that there is no changes being recommended to the code amendments as recommended by staff. But they are recommending changes to the section dealing with fireworks and those two specific. Can I do this? We'll just do some roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. Okay.
Okay.
Beach regular TV. So at this point, we have a consent agenda. We'll take consent agenda, then I'm going to recess this because I know that there are quite a few people here for a item that's later on the joint meeting agenda. So consent is usually an item where we take several items at one time. They're usually routine items. So our consent agenda tonight has 4 items on it: the Treasurer's Report for April 27th through May 11th, and then minutes for the City Council meeting of April 4th. There is a proposed equity adjustments to salaries for 5 job classes represented by Service Employees International Union, Local 620. And then there is authorization for filing of an application for the 2011 COPS Hiring Recovery Program. Do any members of the council want to pull any item from
8,
consent?
Please.
Okay.
Because I have a question on that.
So rather than...
Everything else is fine.
Okay. City Attorney, can she just ask her question without us officially pulling that item?
That is up to you. And... I imagine it would depend on the nature of the question and the amount of staff involvement
in that sense, then we will pull item number 8, and so I'll accept a motion on items 5, 6, and 7.
I move that we accept staff's recommendations on items 5, 6, and 7 of the consent agenda.
Okay.
I'll second that motion.
Very good. There's a motion and there's a second. If there's no discussion, roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. And we typically, any item pulled from consent, we usually put after business, but let's just take it right now. So, staff, did you want to make a report on this? Or do you want to allow her to just ask her question? Go ahead and just ask your question.
Go ahead.
Okay. I was confused. My question is, you're talking about hiring if we get this grant, one full-time police officer.
That's correct.
Okay. Then why, and then everything is paid for in that grant for the first 3 years, except for increases.
Include all of the benefits, everything that's involved with the hiring process, anything involved in maintaining that officer and their benefits and everything. It could be a little high, but we want to make sure that when we apply for this, we cover all our costs and not stuck with an additional cost at the end of the 4 years.
Then what is an entry-level officer paid?
It probably around $65,000, $60,000. I don't have that figure in front of me.
Okay. To me, it still seemed like a lot to go from then from $60,000 to $158,000.
Well, that's with all the benefits and everything that's involved with it.
And, oh, I looked at that chart.
And the other thing you must remember is that benefit costs are roughly 40% of your salary costs, and they're added together.
Well, I should switch jobs.
Currently, if I might add, a police officer right now, full year with benefits and costs are just over $100,000, $110,000. So predicting that out in 4 years from now, and again, these are estimates. More than likely, it won't be that much, but in order for us to apply for the grant, we want to make sure we're covered. And who knows what the benefits and everything is going to be in 4 years from now.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I just need clarification on that amount. Otherwise, I'm fine with it.
Okay. Were there any other questions from other council members? And since we pulled this from consent, does anyone in the public want to address this item? Okay. Seeing none, I'm going to close it to the public. I'll bring it back. And someone prepared to make a motion on this item?
I'll move for staff's recommendation.
I'll second that.
Okay. There's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, roll call.
Yes.
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 Mayor Pro Tem Nichols?
Yes.
And Mayor Scholl?
Yes. So let's move to regular business. This is item number 9. This is appointment to the Citizens Oversight Committee, Administrative Services Director Chapman.
Honorable Mayor and City Council, Gayla Chapman, Administrative Services Director. Tonight we have before you an appointment to the Citizens Oversight Committee for the sales tax pursuant to ordinance number 0612 establishing a transaction and use tax. The City Council authorized the formation of the Citizens Oversight Committee to consist of 5 citizen members. The committee is to review an annual report summarizing expenditures and revenues generated from the transaction and use tax and budgeted expenditures for the upcoming fiscal year, as well as to provide a report to the council and the citizens of Grover Beach. Currently, we have 1 vacancy on the committee.
We appoint James Caden to fill the remainder of a 4-year term on the Citizen Oversight Committee.
I'll second that.
Okay, very good. There's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, roll call.
Yes.
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 And Mayor Scholl.
Yes, thank you, Donna. And at this point, I am going to recess the regular meeting, and I am going to call to order a joint City Council Improvement Agency meeting for Monday, May 16, 2011. So, Donna, when you are ready.
Councilman Board Member Bright.
Here.
Councilman Board Member Molnar.
Here.
Councilman Board Member Peterson.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem and Vice Chair Nichols.
Here.
Mayor and Chair Scholes.
Here. Okay, let's move on to our public communications. Do any members of the public want to address the council/improvement agency doing public communications this evening? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to close it and bring it back to the council/improvement agency. And let's move into our consent agenda tonight. This is item CCIA1, and this is the minutes of the Joint City Council Improvement Agency meeting of April 4, 2011. Any members of the council want to pull this item from consent? If not, I'll accept the motion.
I'll make a motion that we accept the consent agenda and the minutes as submitted.
I'll second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. No extensions. Motion carries. Moving on to item CCIA2, and this is consideration of adoption of a resolution of intent to sell city property located on 920 Brighton Avenue, and City Manager Executive Director Peralt.
Yes, Mr. Mayor and Chair and members of the board and the City Council. The item you have before you is a consideration of a resolution which would establish the intent to sell city property currently located at 920 Brighton
Avenue. As noted in the staff report, this is a two-step process. What you would be doing tonight is entertaining public testimony as to potential sale. And the only action that is actually required by the council or asked of the council this evening is to set a second public hearing, after which the council would, at that time, council would be in a position to actually sell the property to the agency. By the way of background, the more successful programs we've had in that we've been able to actually produce homes located on Long Branch and Fifth, and currently we're working on a project at the location of 10th and Farrell. Essentially what this does is it does meets a couple of objectives. That first objective is obviously the provision of affordable housing. The second is by selling a piece of city property to the agency, the resulting revenue is then used in the general fund for operational purposes. As you'll recall, we have periodically reviewed the inventory of parcels for probably the last year, year and a half. And on April 4th, the council designated the current property at 920 Brighton for further consideration. This particular property at present is present use is as a community garden site. It was considered a possible strong potential for an affordable housing project because it is level. It is adjacent to the park and would be able to avail anybody living there of the park amenities. Also, it is a fairly level piece. It consists of 6,620 square feet, and so would be easier to develop than some of the other pieces that the city currently owns. As noted in the staff report, there are, should the council decide to proceed with this, there are a number of subsequent process and procedures that would need to take place. Obviously, there would need to be a zone change and a general plan amendment as it is presently designated as parks and recreation, and the zoning is public facility. It should be noted that relative to this project, there is no specific or this property, there's no specific project in mind at this particular point. The only item that is really before the council for consideration is the actual sale of the property. Likely, staff would be recommending that the zoning be changed to R2. R2 is consistent with what you'll find along Brighton Avenue. In terms of what that could produce, just so you know, for the timing on the project is in the future sometime. I wouldn't see anything happening before the next 6 months, and probably a good deal later than that. In terms of the community garden, obviously there is an opportunity that's developed around on Ramona Avenue adjacent to the exploration station, and we would, should the council wish to proceed with this, we would certainly be working with the exploration to try and accommodate some of the folks that are currently using this site. There are also other possibilities. Council indicated an interest in seeing other gardens located within the city at some of our larger park facilities. For instance, 16th Street might present another appropriate location. Also, there is a piece just south of Long Branch that has been left to the city and isn't suitable for a park, but probably would make a good neighborhood garden in that particular area. So there are some potentials for continuing the use throughout the city. The city, from staff's perspective, as I've indicated, feel that it is probably an appropriate use of an asset, and we need to consider today how we do, in fact, use our assets to the best degree that we can. Obviously, there are a number of people here that would be interested in addressing this item. My recommendation is that the council conduct this first initial hearing and that the and then adopt the resolution of intent, which would set the public hearing probably for the first meeting in June. That concludes my staff report. I'm available to answer any questions you might have.
Okay. Any questions of staff? Councilmember Peterson.
I went to the hardware store on Saturday and came across a number of individuals who had a lot of concerns about this. And so I did raise some of those questions with the city manager, and he's addressed a few of them. I do have several more questions now also, and I want to let folks know that I really appreciate people coming and letting us know what
all are too.
So we would be reverting back to
what
the original
correct.
Was. And you've indicated on this lot, even at R2, the most that could be built is what can be built on pretty much any residential lot, which is a primary residence and a guest home or a granny unit.
Right.
Okay, so it would be consistent with the rest of the city. And that 25 feet really only accommodates two stories.
Right.
And do you know what the parking regulations would be? Because parking is really constrained
it
there.
Probably would have, you know, I'd have to ask the two-car garage, I believe, would be what the standard would be.
Okay. And let's see. It would be helpful, too, to know what are the affordable guidelines. I think the report mentioned it would be low income to extremely low income?
Well, generally, the council has an agency board is focused the concentration on very low or lower income levels. That is certainly up to you. But to give you an idea of what we're talking about for a family of four, lower income is considered for a family of four, $58,000. Median income is $72,500. Moderate income is $87,000. Very low income is $36,250. So that kind of gets you a range. Obviously, you can use that how you see fit.
So it would be a single-family home that would accommodate folks probably with an income, minimum income of $36,000 for a family of four, and probably a maximum income of $87,000.
If you, depending mm-hmm. on how you want
right.
to.
Right. That could be, it could right. change if it would accommodate six people living there or whatever. Okay. And I'm wondering if any alternative locations have been considered for a community park at this point. Is there anything put into effect to?
None other than what I've mentioned at this particular time. But, you know, we would also most likely be able to use housing-related funds for any kind of transitional costs that might be associated with it, since we're eliminating one use and supplementing that with affordable housing. First of all, the redevelopment agency law allows cities to utilize housing funds outside of its project area.
Okay.
And, you know, we've consistently done that throughout the years. Sometimes it's just difficult to find the properties, et cetera, or in this mm-hmm. case, the city may not own the appropriate property within the agency area.
Okay. And two more questions. One was, I heard a report that there were some things removed from the park.
And I followed up on your question about that. And actually what that was, it was a request by the Parks and Rec director. Apparently there had been some shelving and some other pieces that had been more or less abandoned and left in the back of the site. So it was an effort to try and clean the site. It had nothing to do actually with the potential sale of the site.
And what I heard was that there were some chairs removed too, and so that was a I guess that was a cause for alarm.
That I wouldn't know because I didn't get a specific detail as to what was removed.
Okay. And then finally, this will add 250,000, give or take, to an 800,000 deficit. And I know that we're not having budget conversations now, but if we're not able to do this, we have to find 250,000. Are you able to give us some idea of if we can't do this, what some of our alternatives might be?
The council would have to, and we've got budget hearings coming up. The council would have to take that into account, and you'd have essentially a couple of options. It's either reserve funds or further reductions in operational costs.
Okay, or streets. Okay. Thank you. That's all I had for now.
Okay.
I have a question.
Councilman Bonar.
Okay. I was looking at the minutes from April 4th when we had made this original decision to sell Brighton, and we had talked about other alternatives, such as looking into Cleaver Park and with the veterans. Was anything done about that?
Haven't had time to do that, but this was identified as the top priority and that we were going to go ahead and proceed as a second priority with those pieces. Okay. Council agency board would be, in this case, agency board makes a determination on what kind of project they actually want to see there.
And the changing of the zoning, it's kind of interesting. Is that something that is done really easily?
It has to go through the same process that you would with any other kind of zone change, which would require council and planning commission and then council action.
Just out of curiosity, let's say a residential person, a resident in the city wanted to have a zoning change on their lot. What are their chances? So I'm saying, is this something that the city can just go ahead and say, since we're doing this, we can just change the zoning, whereas somebody else who comes along and says, I want to do this, can I just change my zoning?
I would think that you would have to take a look at your general plan and see whether or not that zone change might add any benefit to the implementation of the general plan.
Okay. I know it was in the past residential, but that was just something that came to mind. All right. Thank you.
Okay. And just to further clarify, it is the same process, whether the city is the applicant or there's a private property owner that's the applicant. To change the zoning is a legislative act that would have to go to the Planning Commission, a recommendation to the City Council, and the City Council would have to make that decision. So it is a process that this body would have to follow, whether it's public or private land. Yes. So let me see if there's any questions to my right.
No, thank you.
None? Mayor Pro Tem? Okay. You know, I know people have been here waiting for a long time. I'm going to hold my comments, and I'm going to open this up to the public. And so I know that there have been a lot of people waiting, so I'm opening this up to the public. If there's any member that would like to address the item before the council, please come forward, state your name and city of residence for the record.
My name is Judy Schwarm, and I live across from the garden. And at this point, some of the wording this evening, like probably and most likely, I find that a very big gray area. On the day they talked about the furniture being removed, I happened to be outside in my yard. There's a picture there that shows exactly what was removed. It was wrought iron benches and chairs. It was not any kind of shelving unit. So I feel there's information that's not accurate for lives. Ramona Park is just such an excellent addition. There is only 39 regular parking places, 2 handicap, and 5 compact parking spots for that area, which there is a street across the street from Ramona Park, but that is also condos and apartments. And even though they have one garage and one space, it's still impacted every night. So when someone says it'll probably be a one-unit house, probably is a gray area. That's not telling us what it is going to be. and so parking is a major concern. And I would really like more steps taken so we can be sure that the information you are getting is correct. So then in turn, what we get is also correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Good evening, Council. My name's Greg Nestor. I'm a local builder and developer. I'm here in conjunction with the Yokui property. It's on between 13th and 4th Street, and it's my understanding that it was one of the parcels that were being considered in addition to the Brighton parcel, and I'm not here to speak for or against Ramona Park or the actions of the city in regards to that particular piece, but if indeed that piece does go to the process of conversion and sale and so forth, that brings more focus back to what the former Okui property is located right there on the southeast corner of their strawberry field that was taken by eminent domain many, many years ago, and the use of that property was designated for a retention basin. So it was curious and for us to understand how that basin either was not required or needed, or how the conversion of a basin to residential properties could occur. And in the event that that is considered down the road further for whatever reason, a lot of concerns from the family in regards to ag buffers and setbacks by placing a residential component in that piece. And you know, if it's not required for a basin and it can be converted, maybe it should be offered for sale back to the Okui family before any further actions are done there. And really, I think when you study your general plan amendments that were made not long ago, the utilization of that particular corner.
One of the Okuis, and we farm over there. And then when I heard that we are one of the three properties that could be sold to put low-income housing by us. And, you know, we've been farming over there for over 50 years. And you know, originally, we didn't want to sell or having to put the drainage basin there. But I was pretty young at the time still, over probably 20 years ago. And anyway, the city came, and there was flooding there. So they eminent domained the property. And we, you know, we didn't want to do that. We wanted to lease it or do something where we could at least, you know, have a little control on it. And then when I find out that you want to, is considered to put housing on it, it's kind of funny that we're trying to keep housing away from us and you want to encroach housing on us. And then it kind of irks me a little bit to find out that all these years we've been farming and then all of a sudden we hear that you can, the basin could have been smaller, maybe or maybe not. And then that, you know, you guys overextended the bounds and took more property than needed for the drainage basin. You know, I don't know. But I just want to hear say that I don't think it's a good idea. And just to, you know, really decide what's best for the city.
Thank you, Mr. Okui. Is there anyone else that would like to address the council on this item?
Good evening, Mayor, City Council members. My name is Daryl Voth. My wife and I are the owners of the property at 900 Brighton. We're in the process of moving to Grover Beach and making it our residence. The community garden located at 920 Brighton Avenue is a recreational amenity to the residents of the immediate surrounding area of the garden parcel. Many visitors to Ramona Park will often stop in the garden and overall to the community of Grover Beach. I object to the sale and believe the city should retain the existing garden parcel. The loss of the Brighton Avenue Community Garden will not be offset by the new garden being constructed at 8th Street in Ramona. It's my understanding that new garden is only a short-term use for that particular parcel and that the owner of the land tends to pursue a community structure for that property. In trying to learn something about these issues, proposal seems to be a different policy on behalf of the Grover Beach, one of specifically not preserving open space. but rather of selling open space recreational property to bridge a current budget imbalance. That does not seem like a real sustainable policy, nor one that directly faces the structural problems in the city's budget. It bides time and sells the property to get by. If the economy in the future does not timely recover, what other publicly owned property will the city be willing to sacrifice next? The draft resolution that we received in the mail accompanying the staff report on the proposed sale cites affordable housing as the sole underlying purpose for this sale. But I think we all know that's not really the case. The resolution states that it would be in the public interest to commit the subject parcel for construction of affordable housing units that would bring the city closer to meeting its regional housing needs assessment affordable housing allocation, although not following the slow cog principles for such development. The proposed resolution makes no mention of any other public interests that may be involved, and it certainly does not mention preserving open space. The staff report on the proposed sale does not even mention the current recreational use of the parcel as a community garden, or that there will be any negative impacts on the current garden users, Ramona Park visitors, or the residential area surrounding the garden. The staff report points out that the residential use of this subject parcel would require a general plan amendment, zone change, and amendment of the Ramona specific plan, and notes that all of that could just happen later. It seems to me that instead of losing a recreational amenity and having to go through the expense of a general plan amendment, zone change, and amendment of the Ramona specific plan, if affordable housing units are really the goal, the improvement agency in this down real estate market could purchase, possibly even for less money than would be involved in this project, vacant land or underutilized parcels in areas already zoned for multiple residential use or duplex residential use. I don't know what all of the financial problems are. I understand they're substantial, but the losing this community asset in the long run, I believe, is not good policy. And there probably should be more community parks in this city, if at all possible. I think they're a great idea. From our experience of the people there, they love it. You should come out and spend a little time with them. But affordable housing project doesn't have to go there. There are a lot of other places they can go. It really, I think it's about the money. In closing, selling off the open space residential community amenities leads to a less robust and attractive residential areas of the city. Where will the business owners and the entrepreneurs the city is trying to attract in the future choose to live? Grover Beach or Royo Grande?
Thank you, Mr. Volk.
Could I ask one more thing?
I've given you extra time. You have one last statement, or what is your request?
Is it possible to move the next hearing to the second meeting in June?
We'll have to see where the council's going with this. So thank you for that comment.
Okay.
And are you going to clean up your notes and submit those to the staff when you
get? Sure, I'll be glad to do.
Great, thank you.
My name is Heidi Boatman. I live at 260 North 10th Street, right across from Ramona Park. My aunt lives right next door to me, and right next door to her is condos that was already mentioned about the parking. And the condos are owned by the owners, and some of the people that live there take a real responsible job and taking care of their place. There's others that are rented out, and there is trash thrown over in my aunt's yard. There is a lot of noise. The police are called. The garbage cans are left in the streets past the time the garbage people come for a day or so. It's a very uncomfortable situation. one of the things that we had first heard was that this building was going to be for five families, and that it was going to be a three-story structure with parking underneath. And now I'm hearing that it's a one-family structure with maybe in-law quarters. At what is the unit is being, the property is being sold to the redevelopment agency? Is that $250,000?
Okay.
That's a question.
Okay.
The other question is, if the governor, who is already closing all the parks, a lot of parks, and a lot of other things, if he cuts the redevelopment agency, what would happen with this plan? Okay. The other thing is, I love Grover Beach. I love what all the work that's gone in to make this place beautiful. There's a lot of work, a lot of effort. And putting in low-income housing just seems to be going the other way. And we would really like to see this continue to grow and be a beautiful area. Thank you.
Thank you. And I've captured all of your questions.
Okay.
So I promise we'll get you an answer.
All right. Thank you.
Is there someone else that would like to address the council on this item?
I'm Linda Foth. I live at 900 Brighton. I believe the city council members should walk through the community garden at 900 Brighton or 920 Brighton, smell the flowers, and check out the veggies. The garden is a fully utilized, self-sustaining urban open space that provides for recreational, social, and nutritional needs of the community. The proposed low-income housing project is not in a properly zoned location and does not comply with the Ramona-specific plan or the general plan. The proposed sale of the garden should get a disapproving wag of the finger from persons who are interested in Grover Beach beautification and quality of life issues. If this garden were to be lost to development, it would almost definitely be gone forever. We should have more community gardens, not less. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Volk. Is there anyone else for the council this evening? Is whether to move forward and contemplate the sale of this property. Any resulting project would go through the full planning and entitlement process, which means going through planning commission, which are public hearings, and then recommendations to the city council, which would be additional public hearings. So I want to put your fears to rest. There is no specific project before the council tonight. The second question, Bob, that she had asked was about the $250,000. Can you illuminate that? And then also the issue of redevelopment.
We're still dealing with coming up with comparable sales figures, but I would imagine it would be in the range from $230,000 to $250,000. Relative to redevelopment, as you know, yes, the governor has recommended the elimination of redevelopment, but the housing fund is one of the exemptions in both his original proposal to eliminate, and as of today, that revision remains essentially the same.
Okay. And then I know Mr. Dester and Mr. Okui had brought up a concern regarding a different piece, and if that is in fact the subject of a discussion, there would be notification.
That's correct.
Okay. Were there any other comments or questions that had been made that staff had picked up and
the only
wanted
other
to clarify?
One was in terms of the actual project, the zoning, what the zoning would allow. Staff was recommending R2, which would allow a single-family home with possibly a a granny unit. And the only clarification to that is obviously the council has ultimate authority as to what that zoning would be.
And if I may further, Honorable
yes.
Mayor and council members, just so we're clear on a point of procedure, the any rezone or any changes to the general, to the specific plan would come before the City Council and the Planning Commission. A project that consists of a single family residence in that zone, once if the property is rezoned and a granny unit, is not administered. It's a ministerial project. It is not something that the Planning Commission would see.
So basically, staff would make a decision, and obviously their decision is appealable to
right.
a commission, and then that decision. So I do think there is some subsequent discussions, and Mr. Okui, my apologies to you. I've been super busy, and I know you had called me, and I have every intention of getting back to you. So just so you, and I'm not ignoring you. So the item before us is the property on Brighton. So I didn't make any comments, and I didn't ask any questions. So what I want to do is try and frame this a little better. The questions I think that we really need to be looking at are the issue of a general plan consistency. Does the pending or the contemplated sale, is it consistent with general plan? Is it no longer needed for the intended purpose? I think the question becomes, is residential an appropriate use given the surrounding uses? There was no discussion or ever any clarification tonight that talks about there is a residence that is between this community garden and the actual park itself. And I know that because there had been some previous communications with that owner and some hopes of trying to expand the park. And I think they've made some great improvements to their property. And so that kind of limits some of the future use of this property. Is it consistent with surrounding uses? And while there's not a specific project in mind, that'll be a question later. And so while the byproduct certainly would be, if we were going down the road that staff is recommending, there would be some help to the general fund, that it certainly does accomplish the goal of trying to provide, and I'm not going to use the term affordable because that has a negative connotation, but basically trying to provide housing for all sectors, because to be quite honest, you could be looking at this as, let's say, a house or employee housing or something of that nature. So, you know, but that's something to be worked out later depending on the council's decision and direction. So let's have some discussion. Who would like? Councilmember Molinar, I see a smile on your face.
You know, it's interesting. When we first talked about what property to decide to sell, I'd gone along with, you know, what everyone said, not realizing the importance of the community garden. And actually, that it could actually change from a single family to something else. So I heard everyone, and I had a lot of thoughts about this before I came in. And I'm an avid gardener. I grow my own vegetables. And I understand that for a lot of people who don't have the space, it's really nice to have somewhere to go. And I also was not aware, and maybe the city manager can help me with this, I did not know that the gardens that they're building now over there by the exploration station is temporary.
I didn't know that either, and I can only tell you that my only response to that, and please don't take offense to it, but everything is temporary. I mean,
well.
Temporary can be a long time.
Yes, I understand that. All right. So actually, I have a change of heart, and that we really should not consider Okui, because I always thought that was insane anyway, because that's a drainage basin. Looking back at Cleaver Park and some kind of a deal with the veterans, because it's a much larger piece of property and it makes more sense in terms of being by the main street for buses and for commerce and for people to get to. So I actually am going to change my feelings concerning this.
Okay.
Thank you.
Councilmember Peterson, you have something?
I am not an avid gardener, but I love it when other people are, and I have an opportunity to see what they're doing. And I think we should have more community gardens, not less community gardens. And I think that one thing that this discussion has done is it's really made that point. And I have a couple of struggles because I have to look at what are the alternatives. And when I look at the alternatives, they're not pretty. I like this proposal in the sense that it solves a few problems. It solves an affordable housing problem. It solves a city budget problem. And we're talking about the enjoyment of a whole lot of people, but 17 people as opposed to perhaps an impact on a lot more people. And when I say that, I'm thinking in terms of if we don't find $200,000 to $250,000 this way, then what do? Do we fire another policeman or two, and we don't have? We're already four short. Do we, further reduce staff? Further reduce staff budgets? Do we shut the city down? Original intent, and that is not a happy position to be in. Or we're looking at, if we don't go there, well, we could go to the Okui property, and here we have another upstanding family that's been with the community for 50 plus years, and we're again. We've already displaced them. So it's something that is emotional and difficult, and it's not an easy decision. I think that at the very least, if we make the decision to do it, and I agree with the Ramona-specific plan that long-term we really wanted to see more park there. Unfortunately, we are in really tough economic times in a city that has pinched every penny it can over the last 50 years and is now being asked to pinch another 10%. So, or more, plus. So it's not an easy decision, and I think no matter what we do, the very least we need to do is develop two community gardens to take the place of the one. And I also thought about the Cleaver Park area, and that is deed restricted, and there's a huge oak tree right in the middle of it, which isn't conducive to multiple units. And so I think that it's even restricted some of when I was on the Planning Commission, it restricted some of the park development, the fact that there's this amazing heritage oak that we can't chop down and wouldn't want to chop down. It's the only nice oak tree on the property, possibly in the near area. So I still would vote for moving ahead with this plan because the alternatives are not good alternatives. But I don't know if we're able to, but I'd like to instruct that if we do so, we replace one community garden with at least two.
Okay. And I did want to, the city attorney correctly did point out that the resolution that the council was contemplating is to actually set a date for public hearing, not a final action. So that's, if that helps in some of the discussion. Mayor Pro Tem.
Yeah, let me start out by asking staff. There seemed to be some question as to what was actually removed from the property, and I'm not concerned with so much as what it was, but it appears that was this not abandoned, whatever it was?
At least that's the report that I got.
Okay, so it doesn't make any difference what it was. It was just property that was abandoned on the that piece of land that we use for a garden. Thank you. I am mindful of the fact that Morro Bay, Arroyo Grande, San Luis Obispo, and I'm not really sure that I understand why those signatures appear in relation to a piece of property here in Grover Beach where we're struggling with our community to do the best we can with it. So I think there's a little more research that I want to do before I make a final decision. But I think tonight we need to move forward with this.
Councilmember Bright.
Thank you. I really can't add a whole lot more to what has already been said. It is a very difficult and emotional matter, and I understand that. We do, though, have not a whole lot of choice at this point in time. Either we reduce services to everyone in our city, or we we take care of this business. I do, though, agree with Mrs. Voth, I think is your name. Definitely multiple gardens throughout the city, I think, are at least something that we need to follow through with. But at this point in time, I just don't see where there's a whole lot of choice. I don't really have anything else to add to this other than it's hard. It's tough, and it's not something that we want to do. But I do, though, I have one more thing to say, and that is on the subject of affordable housing. There are some very nice affordable housing projects that have been completed in this town. And if people are concerned that an affordable project might not conform to the neighborhood, that's not the case. I would like to see us give a family that deserves to have a home the opportunity to live in a nice neighborhood like we all do and benefit from the amenities that we do have in our town. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I want to thank everyone for coming down and expressing and addressing the council and sharing this information. And I know we've all been trying to read this since we got here this evening, and I agree with a majority of the comments that are made. And so given the hour and given the fact that what's before us is just to adopt a resolution trying to find a compromise to not only increase the parks, but the issue of the budget, and I'm not going to beat a dead horse, but it does raise a question, as Councilman Peterson, you said. I think if we just talk about budget alone, what does the loss of funds mean that does affect operation, and could it affect existing parks, and not only the parks, but the condition of those parks? But that's a debate for another time. I do believe that we should at least set a hearing and move forward, since there's no specific project in front of us tonight. So would someone like to try and form a motion on this item? And then I know that there was a request about when the public hearing gets set, the date and time. We're not going to set an actual date tonight. Is that something that would be discussed?
I think the date is part of the resolution, and that is required under state law, and the date is June 6th, and staff would request that date be kept in the event that the council does move forward with the sale of the property. We will need the time that's available in June to complete the transfer in this budget year.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, I'll move that we proceed with conducting the initial public hearing and adopt the resolution of the intention to sell the property.
Is that it?
Yes.
I'll second that.
Okay, there's a motion, there's a second. Any additional discussion on this item? If not, roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Nichols?
Yes.
Councilmember Bright?
Yes.
Councilmember Molnar?
No.
Councilmember Peterson?
Yes.
And Mayor Scholes?
Yes. With that, let's take a 5-10. Let's come back at 9. Let's take an 8-minute break. I'm going to reconvene the special meeting for the City Council Improvement Agency. You're okay. And what I should have done was to adjourn the joint meeting, and I did not do that. So I'm going to officially adjourn the joint City Council Improvement Agency meeting for Monday, May 16th, 2011. And then we are going to reconvene the regular meeting for the City Council. And we had recessed right after regular business item 9. We are now on regular business item number 10, which is community development block grant participation. Mr. Buckingham.
Good evening, Mayor, members of the City Council. I'm going to provide a little more background tonight just to take you back through the entitlement and non-entitlement CDBG programs. So As you know, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development Community Development Block Grants are what we commonly refer to as CDBG programs. They authorize use of funds to eliminate blight and to assist low and moderate income residents as well in the city. So there are two types of CDBG programs, entitlement and non-entitlement. And currently the city is part of the entitlement program administered by the county. And as a participant in that entitlement program, we receive approximately $120,000 a year. Funding for the non-entitlement program is distributed through a competitive statewide basis. And grants through that program can be awarded for varying amounts, but you know, up to $1 million. And I'm going to talk a little more about that. Last year, the council authorized staff to review the advantages and disadvantages of the entitlement program, or should we leave the entitlement program and consider the non-entitlement program. So looking at the current entitlement program, the county allocates funding on a formula-based, on a formula. Those funds can be used for a variety of different activities as you use them every year, the public service activities, economic development, infrastructure projects, housing rehabilitation. We can also use those funds for the Home Investment Partnership Act, which again is for affordable housing projects, and that's awarded on a competitive basis countywide. The majority of the $120,000 we receive each year, typically about $75,000 to $80,000, is spent on infrastructure projects. A couple of recent examples are the storm drain work done on South 5th Street and new sidewalks on South 13th Street. So, one of the entitlement CDBG programs that benefits the local nonprofit organizations is what we call the public service activities. And of that $120,000, the council has typically allocated the maximum 15%, or about $18,000 a year, to four or five nonprofit groups. In reviewing the non-entitlement program now, again, those funds are distributed through this competitive statewide process. They have three funding categories: general, economic development, and planning and technical assistance grants. The general funds are basically used for infrastructure projects like what we do with our smaller allotment right now. However, in the non-entitlement program, you can compete for grants up to $1.5 million in the general fund category. Economic development funds can be used for infrastructure improvements necessary to accommodate creation, expansion, or retention of identified businesses. Again, these grants can range from $500,000 to $2.5 million if awarded. And then lastly, the planning and technical assistance grants are up to $70,000. They basically fund applications, studies, actual construction drawings. And the idea there is we receive those funds, you design those plans or projects, and then we go out and we use those projects to apply for the applications to actually construct something. So it's kind of a seed capital. So we have money to develop the plan, so then we can be more competitive in actually applying for the grants to construct the projects. As a part of the non-entitlement program, the city would not receive any more monies for this public service activities funding the nonprofit organizations. So in order to determine if the city would be competitive in this non-entitlement program, the city had contracted with Adams Ashby Group to conduct this community income survey. And the primary purpose was to determine if the income-eligible households referred to as target income group had grown from the 2000 census. And the 2010 census information won't be out for probably another couple years for that. So that's why we went ahead and hired, and we wanted to find how competitive we would be. And the results were, right now, citywide, about 60% of the households are income eligible, which would make the city competitive. And to put that in dollars and cents, households that have an income level that do not exceed 80% of the median income, or that would be about $58,000 for a family of four. So almost 60% of our households in the community meet that criteria. So in summary, if the council elects to remain with the entitlement program, you get the $120,000 annually, unless federal funding levels change, and there has been some discussion of that. Based on the allocation, we get our $75,000 in infrastructure programs, and we're able to fund those public service and economic development activities. The major limitation of the entitlement program is that the funding is capped. If the council decides to withdraw from the entitlement program, the city would work with a CDBG grant writing consultant that would help us identify the types of projects that would be the most competitive. So you're looking at a range of projects, and we would look around the city and try to figure out where we would think we would be the most competitive. So, again, the non-entitlement program would eliminate funding for the nonprofits. You did receive one letter tonight after the agenda packet from Pearl Munyak with transitional housing and shelter. So the advantage of the non-entitlement program is that if the city is successful in receiving grants, the amounts would be far in excess of the $120,000 we get through the entitlement program. So in conclusion, staff's recommending the city withdraw from the entitlement program and basically proceed with participation in the non-entitlement statewide program. That concludes my report.
Thank you, Bruce. Any questions of staff? Yes, Councilmember Bright?
I have two to start with. May I reserve the right for others later?
Sure.
Thank you. Would we be able to reenter the entitlement program at a later date?
Yes, we have. It's okay. A three-year cycle, so we need to make that decision now, and 3 years down the road, the council can reconsider at that point whether they want to rejoin the entitlement program.
Okay, thank you. And then under fiscal impacts, the city would need to budget about $7,500 from the general fund to fund the cost of preparing the grant applications. Does that include, is that the consultant cost, or is that staff time?
That would be the consultant time. There would be some staff time involved with that. But in essence, we need to go out and formulate what those projects would be, and there are some costs associated with that. Any housing-related projects, the good news is we would be able to use low and moderate income from the agency. So housing or home or rehab, anything related to those projects, wouldn't be funded out of the general fund. But we're just acknowledging that there has to be some kind of, I call it seed capital from the general fund to go out and get this process initiated or started.
I understand. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Monar.
Thank you. On reading this, if we decide to go with a non-entitlement program, we would have a year and where we would have no money coming in. Is that correct? That's what it...
In general, yes, because we're funding... the funding for this year will be distributed soon, and we're not able to apply for either the home program or the other CDBG programs until, I think it's June of 2012... October 2012 for the home program and October 2013 for the CDBG. That would be the funding you applied before that.
Okay. I don't know how accurate this is, but I thought that the federal government decided to reduce the CDBG amount that they would be funding out by at least 13% and then progressively more each year.
I don't know the status of it. I do, unless the city attorney knows it, but I know 10% was being tossed around. So
I think that the numbers were in a 10% reduction from as far as what the future holds. That's difficult to estimate.
Okay. Does anyone know if that particular reduction affects both the entitled and the non?
It's across the board. Whichever program you're in, you would have to plan for that.
Okay, so then if we had stayed with the entitlement, we may not get $120,000 because they're reducing it. And so this particular, the non-entitlement program gives us an opportunity, if we get the money, to have a greater amount. Okay, now when we apply, if we go with the non-entitlement program, when we apply for grants, do we have to have specific projects in mind for the grants?
Yes.
Okay, and how do we develop those particular projects? What is most important? I mean, that has to have already been thought about, hasn't it, at least by your department?
And again, we would there's a strategy, and some of those different programs look at different TIGs. Some will look at it citywide. If we developed a project that's an area that has a higher TIG, we could be more competitive there.
No, I know. I understand that part. But I'm saying, do you have any specific projects in mind? Why? Because if we don't have a specific project in mind, then why try for something we may not get? Do you see what I'm saying? Whereas the money we currently get, we have things that we use that for.
City Manager.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, some of the projects that we have in mind, obviously we're facing a very real threat. The redevelopment agency may go away. There are several infrastructure projects that would probably be quite eligible for also CDBG funding. There are also housing projects that we've talked about and discussed in the past. This would allow us an opportunity with this amount of access to this kind of dollars, even though it may be shrinking, it would allow us to take on some larger housing projects as well than we've been able to in the past.
Okay. And so in this particular non-entitlement program, there's no way to kind of squeeze in some nonprofit, helping out nonprofits at all?
You can make an application as part of your application. You can ask for funding. My understanding is you have to identify the program. It would only go to one nonprofit organization. Now, again, that amount can be substantially higher than what the current amounts are, but again, it's something that certainly we're going to come back to the council when we've identified projects to have you look at them if you were to go this route, and we would also have you weigh in on the public services as well.
So then each year you could rotate a public service that you would help as opposed to a few of them each year. All right, thank you.
Councilmember Peterson.
They asked all my questions.
Nice. Mayor Pro Tem, do you have anything?
Not at the moment.
Great. And I have to say you guys asked all my questions too, so very good. At this point, let's see if this is a regular business item, and there's really not, I see two people from the public here. Does anyone in the public want to address this item before the council? Seeing that, I'm going to bring it back, and I guess we need to give staffs some direction on this. So their recommendation is to adopt the resolution withdrawn from the entitlement program. The only thing I will say is, Phyllis, those were excellent questions, and staff would certainly come back with recommendations on capital projects, whether it's part of the CEIP program. We were very successful in using some community development block grant monies on the Mentone storm drain. And I know that there had been some expressed interest in trying to remove some ADA or some handicap barriers on South 13th Street. And I think that's in one of the block areas. And I think there's even portions of Grand, if I'm not mistaken. So anyway, okay, so the Mayor Pro Tem.
If we go with the non-entitlement, we obviously are going to have to find somebody to fill out the application for grants. And to me, that is going to be very critical if we go that direction. And I'm not real comfortable going that direction unless we have some idea of who we can use that we have the confidence in that we're going to get or at least have a good shot at some of the grant money that's available. And I was wondering if staff has given that any thought.
Well, the consultant that's assisted us with the survey also does that kind of grant writing, and there are a couple of top firms that I'm aware of in the state that normally are on all of these lists that we could enlist their assistance in doing that grant writing.
And keep it within our budget.
Right.
Okay, I think that's pretty critical in my thinking anyway as to whether or not we go with this non-entitlement program. Okay.
So what's the Councilman Warner?
I don't know if I read it here or not. What is the time frame then? So our entitlement program ends, it says what, on June 30th, 2012, right?
Correct.
Okay. When do we have to give them notice that we're not going to accept the entitlement program.
That's a part of what we're doing right now.
But, I mean, do they have a date?
Yes. We would communicate with them almost immediately because this would go to a public hearing in front of the board, I think, on June 21st.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Their staff reports are due probably next week.
Okay, so, yeah, you would almost have to elect them immediately depending on the decision of the city council. Okay. So, in more discussion, or is someone prepared to try and make a motion on this item?
Well, as a point of discussion, I know it's very, very, very difficult not to give to these nonprofits that we've supported for many, many years. On the other hand, if we can raise 10 times that amount of money, then I think that we have a responsibility to our residents and to the taxpayers to give them the biggest possible bang for their buck. And we do have a really good track record for getting grants and making do with very little. So I think that we should, painful as it is, I personally would like to see us leverage every dollar we can and be able to improve the community that way. So by way of discussion. Yeah.
Yes.
If we go with the non-entitlement program, will that, under the current economic circumstances, certainly in our situation, will that eliminate our being able to fund any of the nonprofits, or will we have any money available that we can work with to any extent?
Ultimately, that's a council decision. It's going to sound like I'm passing it back to you, but ultimately you have the ability within your budget to do that if you so desire.
So let me just say that the amount we were talking about is, what, between 15 and 20 grand?
Yeah.
And so if we are successful as non-entitlement program, there's nothing to say that, and I know it's hard to say this in this economic day and age, but we do have the discretion to carve out money in the general fund to fund these worthy organizations. So we do have another avenue.
Don't we always also, though, have the option of maybe partnering with one? Did I understand that correctly?
It is part of our non-entitlement application. We can't apply for funds for a nonprofit, but it can only be directed at one organization.
So one per year or one per cycle?
Per grant, yeah.
Okay.
So I mean, here's a looking at the glass half full world. We've been trying to deal with the issue of homelessness and transitional housing. If a site is found in Grover Beach and a project is developed, there would be no reason that we could not make application for a substantial amount to go toward that specific project. Mm-hmm. This gives us a little more flexibility. And I understand that it's going to be based on competition. So the question really becomes, is it worth having $120,000 and really about a little more than half of that has really been spent on actual physical projects versus being able to apply for up to a million plus on a hopefully what we would deem a worthy project. I think that's really what we need to discuss, and that's your decision points.
Okay. Do you have any kind of, I don't know if we call it statistics, or when you looked into this, how other cities have done that have chosen to go this route? I mean,
we did go at one time and talk to Morro Bay, who is a non-entitlement city, and they had been very successful in a number of projects in getting dollars. I mean, it's kind of anecdotal, but that was the best example, or the only example, I think, in our county of somebody that's gone out of the non-entitlement and been successful. And their target income group was 49% or 50%. It was significantly less than our 60%. Again, depending on the types of projects, that number can be more important or more heavily weighted, but that would be the best example.
Okay. So,
and I can tell you that the city of Tulare, where I am, serve as city attorney, is in the non-entitlement function, and they receive well in excess of $1.5 million pretty much annually.
And I would just say, from where I stand,
the threat to redevelopment is very real, and I understand that the governor's May revised budget came out today, and it is still in there. And I know that the Republicans have put together a budget alternative, and one of their assumptions is that redevelopment has been eliminated. So, you know, depending on the projects that are selected by the council and certainly the success rate, this could offset some of that potential loss, because it is a very real threat that redevelopment could be eliminated.
I'm ready to make a motion.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem.
I will recommend that we adopt the resolution withdrawing from the entitlement program with the Urban County.
I'll second that.
So there's a motion and a second. Any more discussion? Okay. Donna, roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Nichols.
Yes.
Councilmember Peterson.
Yes.
Councilmember Bright.
Yes.
Councilmember Molnar.
Yes.
And Mayor Schultz.
Yes. Okay, so we have no pool consent agenda items. Council committee reports. Let's see, anyone have anything they want to report tonight?
I do.
Okay.
Mine is more of a report on a report to come. And I wanted to hand out to everybody, and I've got one for Donna here too. You one for Donna. This is the 22-page article in U.S. Airways on San Luis Obispo County. To put it in perspective, I think that Monterey County had one, and they got, I believe, something like 9 pages. Mm-hmm. So we have really excelled, and this is a report both from the Visitor and Convention Bureau and from the Economic Vitality Corporation. Mm-hmm, they both participated, and Grover Beach is extremely well represented in a number of different areas. So the reason I say I'm reporting on a report is that I am in the process of preparing a memo. I have some suggestions about some ways that may be helpful to the budget, but also helpful to our membership of the VCB. And so I am going to be coming to you all with a memo once I have a little more information, with some suggestions about our membership in the Visitor and Convention Bureau and how we might be able to leverage that a bit better.
Okay, very good. And I thought you were going to take an opportunity to point us to page 12,
uh-huh,
in which it mentions Grover Beach, and which it says the undiscovered beach town is the entrance to Oceano Dune State Vehicular Recreation Area, affording two must-dos: must-do horseback riding along the beach, must-do rent an off-road vehicle and explore the dunes, or just drive along the coast. The best-kept secret, the sizzling summer concert series and farmer's market at Ramona Garden Park.
Yeah. And there are several other good mentions, too.
Not bad. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you for that.
I do.
Okay. So let's see. Is that a committee report or
yes,
a communication?
Is. Not an opinion.
No, I said communication.
I'm getting better at this.
All right.
Okay. I sent an email to Bob. The Integrated Waste Management Authority has decided to tackle the issue of plastic and paper bags. Mm. And based upon what's been happening in other parts of the state, we agreed on a fourth alternative to what everyone else is doing, and that is to come up with an ordinance. And the ordinance will have a positive spin. And I brought these pictures that were presented to us. It's called Baby in a Bag, and it's a picture of a baby seal that is caught in a plastic bag. And basically what the board is going to do, and they are having a first draft coming up soon, is to put a spin on the positive aspect of it, not necessarily that we're banning paper and plastic, but that we are going to be doing things that are good for the environment, and there'll be a lot of educational aspect to this. Instead of coming up and having to do an EIR, which will cost over $100,000, they came up with the idea of doing an ordinance based upon litigation that's happening in Manhattan Beach. The Save the Plastic folks have come to court, and they have said paper is just as bad as plastic. So what the county has decided is to avoid that kind of litigation is that they will ban both. And there will be a period of time in which recyclable bags will be offered. you know, at no cost to people to help them to get into the mode of not, you know, expecting there to be bags at the store anymore. There'll be things such as like in Costco where boxes are used. If you have small numbers of items, you know, you can just carry them out. If you have large items and you don't have a bag and don't want to buy a bag, you're going to just put them right back in the cart and drive them out to your car and put them in your trunk, just like that. A lot of this goes back to, I believe it was SB 2448 that was in 2006, where the grocery stores were required to sell recyclable bags. And that's why we've seen the ones in Vons and Albertsons that have their names on it. And a lot of people are probably not aware why those suddenly appeared. They had to, as mandated by the state. Another issue that was brought up is why don't we go along with also banning polystyrene and styrofoam? Well, there's SB 568, which is actually going to be talked about at the end of this month in Sacramento, and that, if passed, will require that those particular styrofoam and takeout boxes, places at fast food restaurants, will be banned effective January, I believe I had said it was 2014, and that schools will no longer be able to offer meals or anything in January 2015. I will keep you updated. As the representative, you'll need to be aware of the ordinance, and we'll have to talk about it so that I will properly represent the city's viewpoint, because this will be countywide. Okay. Thank you.
Nice report. Any committee reports, am I right?
I have APCD on Wednesday. So, no, thank you.
Okay, Mayor Pro Tem.
Yeah, I had questions from Councilmember Bright with reference to the sanitation district and the notice of violation. And I can tell you that these are all being responded to. Some of them have already been responded to, but the state needs an answer by the 18th of this month, and that is being prepared. They have already responded to some of the answers or some of the questions, and the rest of them are being put together by the Wallace Group, by our engineer and administrator, and I will have answers on all of those questions. If you want specific answers on any of these, I'll have those for you after we get the report completed.
So, okay, my understanding, though, it was due by the 31st.
Correct, May 31st.
Right, you said the 18th.
Yeah, oh, I'm sorry. Okay, 31st, I'm sorry. I think we intend to have it by the 18th, have it done and sent off
I see.
To them.
Okay. I would like to have these questions answered, if you wouldn't mind. That I would appreciate that.
Okay.
Specifically.
I'll probably provide you with a copy of the report.
So you'll provide the whole council with a copy?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Perfect. Okay.
And Zone 3, pardon?
Is that also going to tell us how much it cost? I don't think it is, so that would have to be additional information. So I'd like to know what the cost of the response to that NOV is, or is expected to be. Sounds to me like it's going to be a good chunk of change.
Okay.
I'd just like to know. I think others would.
You guys are interested in having our wrap? And that's I will say that's the tough scenario that we faced. I know the Surf Riders representatives have decided that they're going to be coming every week and asking for these things. We get into an issue of our remedies are to have our representative ask these questions of the board at that time and bring it back to us, as opposed to us trying to deliberate and do what apparently Oceano did. So I think that's, you know, hopefully that's not contributing to the frustration, but I think that's the reality of it. And if you are, you know, so let's funnel these questions to our representative and see what responses we get, and then we'll have to make a decision accordingly based on that. Okay?
Okay, well, this brought up what I was going to bring up.
Absolutely.
Later. So
now it's later.
Oh,
and hold on. Do you have, well, we're discussing that, so what do you have?
Their request about the testing, not to reveal too much information, I have a bookkeeping client who has truck washes in Riverside County, Tulare, and Stockton, which is San Joaquin. And they require of a truck wash, because of its BODs, to have more than once a week testing of its water that goes into the sewer system or the wastewater system. And I, you know, drain off from a truck is, you know, has dirt and oil and stuff, is not as significant an issue as sewage. So I actually understand their point of asking for more than once a week testing, because this is a much more significant thing that is going into our oceans than, you know, dirt off of a truck.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wonder how in go about asking that they test more often. Can we ask them to do that?
Well, I think that's where we're having that discussion. So,
let me respond to
that. Yeah, why don't you? Because I don't think he specifically cited and saying that the South Sand is not doing it. He used a different example, but go ahead.
Well, I get a little bit discouraged when they keep coming before this council. They keep going before the Oceano Community Service District. They keep going before the Arroyo Grande City Council. We are governed by the state, and the Regional Water Quality Control Board watches everything we do. We do testing on a daily basis. We do all sorts of testing. I don't know specifically what sort of testing a particular individual wants. There are probably 12 or 15 different types of tests that are done almost on a daily basis. The surf riders at one point said, we would like to be there and we would like to do the testing. Well, that's just a little bit far out, I think. I think what they need to do, and somebody hopefully will direct them, and they've already been told once, I know, they should go to the state and say that they're not happy with what's being done at the sanitation district, because the state sets the rules for what we do and don't do. The state does the testing for or reviews the test that we do on a regular basis. So I don't understand why they keep coming before this council, asking this council to do something when this is a state-regulated project.
But they go to other councils too, you said.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well,
instead
you know,
of going to the state, why?
Well, you know what? You get stuff done by attrition. So.
Well, that's it. They, as long as they come, I'm going to give them 3 minutes or try and keep them close to that. I think what I'm hoping of our group is. Yes, we want to ask the tough questions. We want to have our representative ask those questions, and we want to get answers. And then, but that we follow procedure. And I think what it appears to be is, I just want to make sure that we're not getting confused and pulled into some strategy surrounding that. So we just need to make sure that we're getting information, and if we don't believe the information that we're getting and we're not satisfied, then we have to obviously communicate that to our representative, change our representative, or do a better job and have him be a little more tough on John Wallace or the operators of the plant. And I think that's where they're going to keep coming. So And they're well within the right to come here and do public communication and make those comments.
Okay.
So, you know, the fact of asking how much he makes of us is really not they ought to be going to the actual South Sand Board and asking that question. So, I mean, they're well intentioned. We just got to make sure that we are able to respond when it's appropriate and direct them to the proper agencies to get those answers, and then try and learn really what is it that they're asking, because I know one of them continues to ask about reclaimed and recycled water, and I think we all share that value, but the question is, how do you get there and how do you pay for it? And so those are sort of some of the things where, you know, obviously
have to figure out how we be responsive, and I want to make sure that we are responsive and that we are not, and I know it gets cumbersome, but, you know, it is well within their right. And so,
well, they have consistently asked that question about reclaimed water. They have not come forward and said, we know exactly how you can pay for it. No, and you're talking about millions of dollars to do that. And nobody has come forth and said, we think you ought to do it, and we can tell you how to finance it, too.
Mm-hmm.
No, all they do is say, we think you ought to do it.
Okay.
Okay,
do you have anything else?
No, that was it.
Okay.
Great. Thank you.
Zone 3.
Zone 3, we did pass the budget at the last meeting, and the next meeting is scheduled for this week.
Okay, very good. So I think that leaves me, right? Yeah. Just real quick, the South County Area Transit, or actually I take that back, the Regional Transit Authority, the board did in fact adopt the fiscal year 12 budget, and right now there are no contemplated cuts to service. So depending on what the governor's budget looks like, and if there continues to be lack of support for transit, then there may be some contemplated cuts in service, and it's probably more looking at Sunday service and evening service that might have to have some service cuts to try and meet the budget. But so far, I believe they've been operating within their budget. Expenditures are down, so that's a good thing. And I believe ridership actually is going up when you're talking about gasoline being, what, $4.40 a gallon? Mm-hmm. I mean, I just spent about $80 to fill my tank up. And then, you know, I'm starting to just take a look at that bus schedule harder.
That's a bicycle.
You know, I actually went on a bike ride on Saturday, but I guess I got to figure out how could I ride into work and get there and
in one piece.
And, yeah, thank you. Absolutely,
yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. So with respect to SLOCOG, the SLOCOG board did meet on May 4th. I did want to let you all know that the board authorized the staff to hire a consultant to assist them in exploring the prospects of San Luis Obispo County becoming a self-help county, which means that there would be a dedicated 0.5% sales tax that would go for street maintenance and possibly other quality of life projects such as open space acquisition, trail construction, and things of that nature. So you may be contacted at some point because they want to hear from electeds with respect to, and I know they probably have talked to city staff to identify what are some of the big needs in Grover Beach, whether it's street maintenance and rehabilitation, whether it is expansion of the train station or expansion of trails. And so what they're going to do is some polling and for the general community. They're also going to be talking to the Chamber of Commerce and other business leaders and find out what they believe are the big needs in the community. And armed with that, they're going to go forward to do some polling. And this is a specific measure, so you would need 66 and or about 67% to pass this, and it's extremely difficult to do. So they will go out and do some polling. I think they're talking about 500 to 600 samples. And when they come back, depending on the responses they get, they will advise the group as to whether it makes sense to go forward now or to drop the whole thing and come back later. But they are targeting 2012. And so I think the big takeaway for Grover Beach, whether you support the concept or not, is that we need to figure out what's more important to us. And I've said street rehabilitation. And I think the last time I and Jess said, you know, if we could just get $1 million a year for street maintenance and rehabilitation, I'd be happy about that. They kind of laughed, and I said, well, $500,000 anyway. So I just wanted to let you know, you'll probably be contacted. You may, as this goes along, you'll probably know someone in the community that may get a phone call. So I don't want you to be surprised or blindsided. So I'll try and keep you up to date as they move forward in this effort. Okay. So that concludes the committee reports, council communications.
Isn't that what we just did?
Well, so two things that I want to bring up really quickly in council communications. You probably all saw that the city of Rio Grande, I believe last Tuesday, met and had a discussion, and apparently on a unanimous vote decided that they wanted to have a face-to-face meeting with us on merger. Now, let me qualify that, because their take on merger is contract services.
Mm-hmm. Which is?
Which is basically we would contract for these services with the Rio Grande. Now, I'm oversimplifying it because I know that Chief Anabali had been saying there's a potential savings of $800 mm-hmm. to a little bit north of $1 million. But I think that number was developed when there was a collaborative discussion to say if it was one police organization, what would that org chart look like? And I know that in one of their prior meetings they had, when we were talking about dispatch services, the issue of consolidation had come up, and they chose, if I'm not mistaken, and Bob, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe they did not express interest in consolidation, but did direct their staff to go forward and take a look at if there's a savings if they were to contract, if Grover was to contract services from them. And so they are now interested in whether we want to have a face-to-face. And so I think if you read the paper, I think you know what my position is, but I said I would bring it up to this council to see if we want to place on an agenda consideration of the city of Rio Grande's request and to give them a formal response. So, Bob, you want to add something to that?
Only that I'm aware that they did take that action. I have not received anything formally from the city of Arroyo Grande at this point, but I expect I will in the coming days. And from staff's perspective, we think that there could be some merits to consolidation, but only if it were done on an equitable basis and had been fully vetted. And that is yet to take place.
Yeah, and that's been consistent with my position as well. So I think what we need to do is allow them to submit a letter if that's what they're going to do, and then place it on a future agenda to have some discussion and have a formal position. Phyllis?
So this is contracting. We would contract for police with them?
That is my understanding.
And would we have any say in this?
Oh. Of course.
I mean, in their attitude. Oh, I'm talking about their attitude.
Hold on.
To be quite honest, I've liked Grover Beach. We have a nice reactive type of police force as opposed to an extremely proactive one, which makes one feel very uncomfortable sometimes in the city of Rio Grande. I'm getting this on the table now.
No,
this is my feeling. And the joke out there from people I've heard is we will become Grover Grande. So... I think, you know,
Royal Beach
or Royal Beach. Yeah, whatever. So that's fine. I mean, we'll go in. I'm agreeable to go in, but, you know,
let me just say, I mean, I'm not one to say, I'm not saying that I'm in support of a face to face. So but I do feel that we need to go through a formal process. If there is a letter inviting us, then we need to put that on the agenda, and we will fully vet this. And it may be, thanks for the offer. We're very happy with our police department the way it is. And unless it is a discussion of consolidation and an equitable position in which we are 50-50% partners, you know, then there's really no reason to have that discussion. I know I'm saying a whole lot more than I probably need to tonight because I don't want to influence anyone.
I don't think so, because I've had people ask me about this. Mm-hmm. And so it is something I think we do need
me
to
too.
Address.
Okay.
Because yeah. people are confused.
Mm-hmm.
So then let's do this. And Bob, let us know when you receive a formal request, and we'll place it on the agenda. And we will fully vet it that evening.
Thank you.
Okay.
Looking forward to it.
Anyway, second item, I'm really enjoying this group, I have to tell you. The second item that I did want to bring up is I know that we've been slow in getting back to or forming a subcommittee to look at Ramona Park, and we had talked about the cul-de-sac of 9th Street and expanding the park. So, and that's mostly through my fault. I've been There's been a lot of other things on our plate, but I just wanted to let you know that I'm going to try and move that forward because I've had some interest expressed by Jeff Lee, by Richard Roberts, by Bob Myers. And so I think we do want to start having that discussion about how do we expand the park and integrate it better with Exploration Station, with Ramona, and this contemplated cul-de-sac of 9th Street. So just to let you know that's still on the radar and to get that back up and formulate that subcommittee. So we'll have to maybe have that on a future agenda as well.
Okay, because I remember being in the audience when Robert said that he would, you know, do it with you, and then, of course, he's gone, and I'm here, so I will be very willing to participate.
Nice.
I have some ideas.
Well played. I like that. Okay. So I just wanted to bring that to everyone's attention, and we will start to formulate that subcommittee and start moving that, at least the design, forward. And obviously, we know we're subject to the whims of the state and wherever funding comes from, so we will keep looking for opportunity. City Manager.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Essentially, I'm going to ask you to review the setting of the date for the budget review, budget discussion, the special meeting. First of all, we had set it, or you had set it, for the 25th. I'm now aware that the mayor has a conflict on the 25th. As I recall, the next available date that seemed that everyone was agreeable to was the 24th, and I'm wondering if we just might be able to move that up a day earlier. If you do that, the other thing I would like to consider you to consider is an earlier start time, let's say at 5 o'clock. And for the simple reason, or let's say 5:30, I have the fiscal report done for the redevelopment agency, and since it's going to be tied in with the review of the redevelopment budget, I would like to be able to present that first, followed by the budget discussion itself.
Okay, so does the 24th work for everyone?
Yes.
5 p.m.?
5 p.m. is fine.
We'll order dinner. So
pizza?
since this is largely my schedule, I would be willing to spring for pizza.
Oh no, I want something.
I can't eat pizza, but I'll bring my own dinner.
Yeah, we'll get you some salad.
Salad's good.
Sound good?
Yeah.
Okay. So basically, Bob, 5 p.m. will be, is it better to start at, let's say, 5:30? So that gives everyone an opportunity to have dinner, go into the meeting at 5:30, and then you would take an hour or an hour and a half and go over redevelopment and the financial analysis and lay out the findings of that and some possible strategies going forward.
Right.
And then
the budget itself.
And then the budget itself.
So what time did we decide?
5:30 for the official start of the meeting, I would suggest.
Okay. And 5 if you want pizza?
And 5 if you want dinner.
Is this involve the public too?
Yeah. The pizza does.
Not the dinner, but the meetings do.
What, John, you're not going to feed the whole
city? There's only
so
much I can do with the mayor's monthly salary.
Can we move it up
and
another half
hour? And that's
not one
of them.
Cocktail hour?
No. Oh God. Who's running this meeting anyway?
Is that on Tuesday the 24th?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh my gosh. Okay, I think we're set. City Attorney, any reports or comments?
No, thank you.
You want to go cover our closed session item this evening?
Certainly. There are three items that the City Council intends to meet in closed session on. One is conference with labor negotiations on all groups. The other one is existing litigation, City of Grover Beach versus Listio. And the third one is one potential case exposure to litigation.
Oh, very good. And I'm going to be out of order here because I should have brought this up to you all during communications. The city manager and I will be traveling to Sacramento with the governor's May revise coming out. This is our traditional legislative action days. And so continuing the lobbying efforts to retain redevelopment are critical. Mm-hmm. So we will be up there lobbying on behalf of the city. But then the other and probably more exciting part of it is that we do have a meeting with the state and Pacifica Host Hotels, who are The consultant that is still, or the developer that's still moving forward with development of the beachfront lodge and conference facilities. And so I think we're still making positive progress. And based on the last meeting that we had about a month or so ago, and the Mayor Pro Tem was there, the owner of the company has agreed to move forward on the environmental impact report on the document as well as the plans. And so we would anticipate the project itself, the environmental document, to be coming to the Planning Commission either in June or early July. So hopefully the council would see something at the end of July or August this year. So exciting news that we are still moving forward on that project. So with that, we are going to recess into closed session.